Good day, everybody. I'm David Irvin. I'm a leadership development specialist and a best-selling author, and we want to welcome you to the Leaders Navigator podcast. The premise is simple. The podcast will provide you with insights for living and leading the authentic way so that we'll be better equipped to amplify our impact as a difference maker in any area in our life. We'll cover a variety of topics related to authenticity and what it means to bring humanity into the world. What's uniquely special is that I'm doing this podcast together with my daughter, Haley, and I'm excited about this opportunity to work jointly on this project that we are both so passionate about. Welcome, Haley, to another episode.
Hey, glad to be here. Always great. So you and Mom this week dropped this news on me, which was really quite rude. Really, I say this jokingly. It wasn't actually rude. About selling my childhood home and downsizing, and so you know it makes total sense cognitively, rationally, whatever. I'm bummed because you know I love that house, obviously. But you know, like, and I was just wondering how you're feeling about all of that. Like, that's a big transition to go from this, you know, this bigger house that you guys raised kids in, and it's an acreage, to think about, living a different lifestyle now at a smaller downsized home, for a myriad of reasons. But how are you feeling about all of that?
Well, I'm working my way through it. You talk about navigating the authentic journey. Let me just set a little context for our listeners, because it's not just my story of downsizing and changing our lifestyle, but I think there's a message here for all of us, because a big part of authentic leadership is really knowing what our values are. And so when we bought this home, gosh, it's almost been 20 years ago, we bought it in a way that it was making a decision about a summer cottage and a home at the same time. So we had this creek and this swimming hole and all the stuff that we could, you know, with you and your friends, getting you through adolescence and having this really outdoor, which is something that we really valued. We really valued our family and we valued outdoors. But there was also something all else that went into that home that you probably never knew. And that is, there was some insecurity that went into the purchase of that home. Now, I always tell people, you got to know what your values are. Well, I'll tell you what my values are. I wanted to prove that I could make it in the world by showing the world that I could afford a big house and that I could afford a nice house in the country and have all these beautiful things around me. And I overstretched. Now, it wasn't unmanageable debt, but I overstretched as a way. There was partly it was the value of our family, but partly it was my own insecurity. And so we've had to put a lot of money into that house the last 20 years. And it has it's put some strain on me. And I've had to be, it's been so busy working to pay for that house that I haven't fully enjoyed it to the degree that it was possible. Now, I'm glad that you and your sister could find value in it, and it was a good place that you could bring your friends, and that there was lots of space. So in part, what's going on for me right now is, yes, at one level, Mom and I are just downsizing, and we don't need this big house anymore. You and Chandra aren't there anymore. And we are downsizing and going to be moving into a more manageable house. But it's also, honestly, been a reflection of our values, where I've started to say, you know what, I'm done with impressing people that I don't know. It's amazing how much we try to keep up with the Joneses. And as soon as we keep up with the Joneses, they refinance. So there's this notion of bigger is better. And as much as I have preached that my entire career against that and knowing what your values are, I actually overextended myself because of my own insecurity and need to impress the world. And so I've had to really take a look at that. And as I get to this stage, this next chapter of my life and my career, I really am examining this notion that who cares what people think? And who cares if we live in a smaller house? And I want to really create some quality of life. What's really important for us now is to be able to come and visit you and to spend time with our grandkids and to spend time. I don't know that we have a need to travel extensively, but we just want to free up cash flow so that we're not under constraints. And I'll tell you, and then I'm meandering here and talking a lot, but I want to come back to you in a second here, but I do want to say that what we're doing is getting to a point where I'm defining retirement as not having to work and being financially independent so that I can choose to do whatever I want in this next chapter of my life. And this, by selling this place, creates an opportunity for us to do that, to integrate our investments with the equity that we have in this home that we've worked hard for. But it's really a change in my own life because it's no longer about proving myself. It's now really about expressing myself. And it's really defining retirement as being wealthy and having enough. And everything has changed, but nothing has changed because I've created this mindset that we have enough and that I don't have to keep there's nothing more for me to prove. And it's spilling over to this whole notion of legacy and the difference that I've made and the difference that I make in the work that I'm doing and being at peace with this stage in my life. So that's a lot of meandering and a lot of talking. So I'll put it back to you to ask me any questions or share your response.
I guess my question is how did you kind of you guys bought this house almost 20 years ago. Not why did it take you so long, but how did it take almost 20 years to kind of recognize that what this house meant beyond just a house for us to grow up in and for your family and stuff. But how did it take you? I was just wondering what kind of sparked this realization of what the house meant in terms of a status symbol or what have you, what actually helped you kind of finally recognize that after so long?
Well, the last 2 years since Chandra has become anchored in her career and she's really fully launched and you're certainly fully launched now. I've just really been, your mom and I have been just looking at our own values and what's really important and what do we want in our life. So there's been an inquiry here for the last couple of years about what, and a lot of that inquiry has to do with what's emerged from our conversations every week. And these podcasts have made me really do some thinking. What do I really value? And what's my legacy? We've had these conversations and what difference have I made? And how do I define retirement? And what's this next stage in my life? These are all questions at the age of 65 that I've been wrestling with. And so it's been kind of a culmination of a lot of these kind of questions. Now to combine with that, there's also been this looking at this house and what does this house represent to us? And we also really enjoy the environment around there and we enjoy walking the dogs and we enjoy the creek and we enjoy, walking the conservancy and just enjoying the property that's around us. So there's been a tough inner challenge it's been a really reflective experience for us where I start to say, what do I really want? What am I really called to do and to be in this next chapter of my life? And it's the very thing that I teach people to stop and to slow down and to pay attention. What really do you value? And are we overextending ourselves? And do we have this goal in our life of having more and it's never enough? And that we just keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So I hope to tell that story and share my story as I continue to work through this process. I mean, you were just before we got online, you were talking about the transition of preparing for this baby to come in the next couple of months. And so we're both going through our own unique little transitions here. And I think that's what life is. It's a series, one transition after another.
I guess kind of coming back to that, like even I was wondering, in your opinion, what is it that like a house, like I know there's all the difference house versus home and whatever, but what does like a house represent to you? Like, and in general, like, you know, to society and things like that, but like, what does a house mean? Do you think, like, what is it? Like, I mean, it's because it's so much more than just, you know, an address that you put on things, but like when you're choosing a house and buying a house and like the house that you will downsize to and this house initially, like, what do you think like houses mean to people? And I say houses very broadly, like dwellings, like making a choice for a dwelling, right? Like, what do you think that means for us as a culture and as a society? Like, what does a house represent, do you think?
Well, it's a very interesting question. And it's fascinating. You know, first of all, a house is one of those things that until you don't have one, you have the luxury of even asking this question. Because I know in our housing crisis in our world, there's many people today that don't have the privilege of having a house and don't have the privilege of even being able to ask that question. So I just want to stop and recognize the fact that we can even have a conversation about the answer to that question speaks to the privilege that you and I have experienced in our life, right?
Definitely. Yeah, for sure.
So I've met a wide variety of perspectives. I've worked with very wealthy people who really aren't attached to their house at all. It's just whether it's an investment, whether it's just a place to come and sleep. But for me, it is a sanctuary and it has to really serve my soul. And it has to be a place where family comes, where my soul dwells, where I can feel like, you know, I come home to myself at the end of the day. I separate my office from my home because, and even if I had, you know, when I worked at home, I had to have a separation. That's my office and that's my sanctuary with my work. But when I come home to myself, I want to make sure that home is a place that I can come to be with myself and with the important people in my life. It's a gathering place. We think of that kitchen and that island in the kitchen and how much we gather around that kitchen and what it means when you come home, when you bring AJ home, when your sister comes home, when the family gathers and we gather around the island. You know, we have that nice living room with all the windows, but you know, it's the kitchen, the living space that we really make connections, sitting around the kitchen table, playing cards, playing board games. There's something that is very special about that. And it also has been in the past, and probably, to be honest with you, still is, there's some residue of it still there, the sense of identity, that it means the kind of home that I have is representative of my worth in the world. That when I have a bigger house, it represents that I'm bigger than I have been, and that or a need to be seen in the world. And I know, honestly, that has been a part of my identity, is my house. And that is the part that is never fulfilled. It's never enough, because then I have to stop and recognize when that voice is there, I have to stop and recognize and say, you know what, that's not going to be fulfilling. I'll never have a big enough house that will make me feel enough if I don't feel it inside. So what it means is that we can create a new home, a new place where my soul can come home to myself, where we can have family together, and we don't have to have that same structure to have what home is emerging into meaning for me now. So those are some of my initial thoughts. I would be curious as to what home means, a house means to you in relation to a home, or if you want to react to anything I've said.
Well, it's funny because we had similar kind of conversations, AJ and I, several weeks ago when we went and we were like, well, maybe we could look at a bigger house. Excuse me, also yawning. Sorry. You know, if you know, like we know, like right now we're in a we're in a townhouse. We're living in a, like, we can comfortably afford this at this point. And anything bigger, especially with the housing market, and that's a whole other can of worms. To have something, like, it would be wonderful to have something bigger as our family gets bigger, and, you know, and all of that too. But like the cost it would be to have something bigger is immense. I keep yawning. Oh my goodness. And you know, so we went and looked at new houses and things like that, and kind of explored and started to think about it, especially as we're thinking about the transition, you know, as this baby's about to come. And I was just doing some thinking about this too, and how, you know, I was doing some research about how one of the reasons, I was listening to an article, where I was like listening to a podcast, and then about with these researchers that were looking at masculinity and the crisis of masculinity. And one of the reasons why they wonder why there's such a, you know, an increasing rate, excuse me. Oh my gosh. Can't stop yawning. What is going on?
Have these on Friday afternoon after.
Oh my goodness. Yes. Or no, all these parent teacher interviews, I tell you, that I've been going through, maybe that's it. One of the reasons why they wonder, reason why there's a lot increasing rates of mental health issues with men, particularly, and young men, is that, you know, my generation, millennials and younger, are looking at what they can afford for housing. And again, too, this is again rooted in, you know, gender roles and gender stereotypes and things like that. But they say that, you know, these young men are looking at what they can afford now, given their current situation, and what their dads particularly were able to afford the generation above them, and feeling like it's not enough, right? And struggling with that too, right? Which is also really interesting about, you know, that need to provide for your family, provide a home for your family, and that show of status, of wealth, that you can take care of your family with a big house or certain number of bedrooms or things like that, and how that's needing to change. And how, you know, this was, AJ and I were talking about this, and it was such a big thing for him. But it wasn't as much of a thing for me. And I don't know if that was because he's, like, you know, a man and I'm a woman, I don't know. Or if that was because, you know, I've lived in different places and haven't, you know, been a little bit more transient in my lifestyle, and, you know, moving around a little bit more. But I wonder if that's also a factor. Do you think that, you know, the idea of, like, being a provider and wanting to be a, you know, provide something for your family, do you think that plays an impact too?
I do. And I think back on my grandfather, your grandmother was raised in a house, 900 square feet with 10 kids. Mm. And, oh my God. And so there, and her father, my grandfather, always felt a sense of failure. He just could not pull it together during the Depression. He went from one business to another. He worked three jobs. And how much he drove himself. And I think a lot of his, I think I inherited through generational trauma, if you will, or generational voices, to say, I have to prove myself beyond what my grandfather did, beyond what my mother did. And it was an incessant goal that my mother had. She always wanted a bigger house. She wanted to prove that she could, she was really the primary breadwinner in our family. She was the businesswoman. She was a generation ahead of herself. So she had that masculine energy for drive and for achievement and for security within a home. So my therapist will frequently ask me, you know, whose voice is that? Is it yours, or is it somebody generationally? And I have to track that back, as, you know, the voice that speaks to me, that drives me today. She continually reminds me to say, whose voice am I really listening to here? Am I still being driven by my grandfather's voice or by my mother's voice? And really taking a close examination and look of that. Because I think that we're redefining that, and that we can, you know, we don't have to have, you know, how many men and women in my generation have worked to the extent so hard to have, and we use it under the guise of, I'm working hard so that I can provide and have this nice home and all of these amenities for you, at the neglect, paradoxically, of the relationships. And how often do we see that? And I think we are certainly, as men, are certainly becoming more aware and conscious of our values to say, hey, listen, I'm not prepared to sell my soul anymore. And we'll live in a smaller house. Maybe we're forced to, but why can't we have that connection and that good sense of self-worth living in a house below our means? And if there's one piece of advice, and it's easy for me because I'm now reaching this point in my life, but if there's one piece of advice that I would give my younger self, would be to live below your means and not put yourself under stress to provide something for your family that you just can't afford or that goes beyond reasonable. Because we could have created that same sense of ritual and family no matter where we lived. I'm convinced of that. Yes, it was a nice thing to have, to be able to provide a home, but that home that you grew up in, that was not because of the house. In part, it was a tool, but you grew up supported and loved, and that we had the connections. That's what made our family, not the house. Do you agree?
I would definitely agree. Yeah, because I think it's even interesting with, it's just even reading about clutter and stuff. And there are growing more and more studies too that say the more stuff and space that you have, well, the more space you have, the more you're likely to fill it with stuff. And the more stuff you have, it actually, contrary to this capitalist ideology that everything is trying to sell us all the time, more stuff actually leads to significantly lower, more stuff equals lower satisfaction. That we actually tend to get less satisfied and less happy the more our house is filled with stuff. Right. And so the idea of having less and focusing on who's in it, and even the idea too, like, thinking from an environmental perspective, I remember growing up and talking to, mom quite a while too, where she would say all these houses are so crammed in together. Like that must be really horrible, like hard to live that way. And now I look at it from a, environmental perspective about being grateful for, community spaces as opposed to like private spaces. And the value of, public parks and libraries and spaces that everybody can use and not just private homes that are massive and sprawling, and how much better that is for the environment, but also for the community and community atmosphere, that like, people living closer together in higher density situations is actually better for our planet and better for humanity, but that was, something I was learning only recently in life and actually kind of recognizing. And I know that comes from North American culture of more and big and flashy, and because that's what sells, that's expensive, right? Like that pays the bills, right? Like if these companies can tell you buy bigger houses, buy bigger TVs, buy more clothes, buy more stuff, and you'll be happier, you'll be more fulfilled, you'll have higher status. If people buy into that, they pay there's a lot of money in there, obviously, right? And so, finding values other than that is huge. It is a hard pill to swallow because we've been so conditioned in our society to, more. But yeah, like it was very, I think it was weirdly calming to recognize that even when we were looking for all these new houses and exploring like what we could have and how exciting that was, it was actually very calming and reassuring to just be like, actually, no, let's not move. Let's live within our means. Let's live in this place for now. Like, we'll get rid of stuff to free up space. We don't need more bedrooms. We can just sort of get rid of stuff to liberate more space. And because it's not actually about what's on the outside or the square footage, it's about, what else we can do in terms of our values, in terms of travel, in terms of exploring the community, in terms of getting out of the house, and the lives that we can build in the house and outside of the house. It's not just about space.
No, I really admired you and AJ for that decision to live below your means and to settle into the home that you have now and to make do with that, because the tendency is we just have to get larger. And as much as I don't want to live in my mother's family with 10 kids in a one room house, at the same time, we do build houses so that every child is alone. Every child has their own room. And what they do is then we allow technology into those rooms, and it begins to unravel about the isolation that we have in our world today, and that we get bigger houses and more isolation. And where's our sense of community? And just a little bit of a side story. Your mom and I were in the library, Cochrane Library, the other day. And I don't know if mom was telling you this, but just how inspired we were to be. And that's probably going to be a topic for another episode. But just how inspired mm-hmm. we were by being in the soul of our community and to have people yeah. interacting with kids and people researching ideas and reading. And it was like a whole community there where people weren't in their houses. They were here enjoying their community. And there's something to be said about creating conscious neighborhoods that bring people together as opposed to separating them. And I think this is what we want to move toward in our homes and our communities. Go ahead.
It's very interesting. Like, you look at the world's happiest societies, right? And it tends to come up with Scandinavia and Japan and places like that. These are places that are focused around community and not around private dwellings and privacy, right? They're focused around community, right? And I know we mentioned this earlier in another podcast, but the idea of a third space, right? And how we're recognizing this to be more and more important, especially as virtual spaces are, we're starting to understand how limiting they are and harmful in some cases, but how important it is to have, you know, your own home, sure, your place of work or school where you go most days, but then this third space, and that needs to take up more and more of a focus in communities, right? A space that doesn't cost anything to participate in, a place that's accessible for all, a gathering place for people and for ideas, and to get to know people who aren't just your family or your colleagues, but people who are different generations than you and from different walks of life than you, people who just live geographically in the same area as you, and that value of community, right? And how, you know, how important that third place is. And I just think of excitedly, like thinking about you and mom, as you guys downsize and move into more of like an urban situation, right? Like, well, I say urban, it's still small town Alberta, but, you know, as you guys move, you know, back into town again, how exciting it'll be to have greater access to those third places, that it's just easier to not engage in them when you're on an acreage. Like, I know you guys were never that far out of town, but you know, it's just easier to just stay home than it is to go out and, you know, do something in the community. But now when you're actually closer and you could walk there, bike there, or, you know, it's a half the drive, right? Like, to be able to, you know, get involved in the community more, and how exciting and enriching and inspiring that will be, you know?
Well, as I do more volunteer work in our community, I'm more drawn to wanting to be closer to that community and actually yeah. being a contributor to it rather than a bystander.
It's so important. Like, that's what they say too about, you know, and I mean, you look at how even, you know, North American response to COVID, right, was so focused on me and the individual and wearing masks to protect yourself, not wearing masks to protect other people. But you look at other places that, you know, handled the pandemic significantly better than we did. And there were places that were about community responsibility and community belonging and value community. And I think like that was something that, you know, makes us realize how important community is. And this is where, like, you know, we have this loneliness epidemic. We have all these mental health crises going on right now. We have, and it's because we're more private. We're more staying home. We are more focused on our own personal houses and our own personal dwellings than we are on, you know, our values and, you know, other people.
Well, this has been another very stimulating conversation. And I, you know, there's so much that we could talk about this, but I hope that our conversation has been valuable, not only for us, but for those who have listened in.
Likewise. It's exciting. And I know, like, you know, this will be, like, I mean, you guys, as you guys are downsizing and you're moving into this next phase, well, I'm sure we'll have lots more to chat about too.
Yes. And I do hope that you will find a way. I hope it'll be possible for you to come home and say goodbye to this place before we let it go.
Oh, for sure. And I think honestly, like, it's, you know, it's an important place, but it's just a place. You know, it's like, whenever I come home, it's not for that house, it's to see you guys, right?
Yeah, you bet.
You know,
so what are you grateful for, my dear?
I am grateful for all of the parental role models that I've had in my life. And I think, like, I was just thinking about this today and community and value of community. It's just funny that this all kind of comes full circle. But we've been having a lot of parent-teacher interviews the last couple of days. And at our school, the way that we do parent-teacher interviews, because we're a smaller school, we have it as a team approach. So all of the educators that teach that student meet the parents in one conference to talk about the student, because generally issues tend to happen, issues or successes tend to happen, similar classes. And so I was just thinking about how grateful I am for such a wonderful school community to be able to interact with these parents for years and build this relationship as you know, their kids grow up, but also how it was, you know, being able to, you know, talk to you about parenting and values and things like that. And then also to see these parents, the good and the bad, but to be able to like reflect on how to raise kids and in a community and what, and how important that is. And, you know, the parents that, you know, the parents that I find as a teacher are the easiest to work with and, you know, like-minded and all of that versus the parents that, you know, don't always, but we don't always see eye to eye. So I'm just grateful to, you know, have exposure to so many different kinds of parents to be able to introspectively think about, you know, what kind of parent I will be. So that's what I'm grateful for. What are you grateful for, Dad?
The rich learning environment you are in.
True.
Well, I'm grateful to be able to have a conversation about housing, and I'm grateful to have a home. And yeah, part of my volunteer work, we were working in our community this week in a focus group to explore barriers to having an age-friendly community. And part of the barriers is housing. And there's little to none to know affordable housing in our town here, and how we need to work together to create an opportunity for people to have housing. And, you know, we take houses for granted when you live in one, and we take a home for granted when we live in one. So I'm grateful that we can even be having this conversation, because with it is privilege, and with that privilege comes some responsibility.
Definitely. Definitely. And all the more reason to value these community spaces that are accessible for all people.
Well, until next time, we hope that our conversation has been enlightening and thought-provoking for those of you who have listened in. Thank you so much for joining us today, and we will see you next time. Thank you, my dear.
So, thank you, Dad, and be real. Stay real.
Stay real.